CougarFan.com, Rising Shot Podcast, episode 421. Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, have you been watching any hockey or lacrosse this weekend?
Have I been watching anything else?
I don't know. Have you?
I don't think I've been watching much of anything else. But I have definitely watched some hockey and some lacrosse. I just actually finished watching a lacrosse game.
Yeah, so I was watching... Excuse me. I was watching the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Rangers here before we started recording. It is quite... do you know how many hockey games are on each day right now? Six.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Six hockey games a day. You can sit there from like 11 o'clock to 11 o'clock watching hockey. It's like 12 hours straight of hockey if you want. It's amazing.
Does it get any better than this?
Well, the announcer tonight on the game said it's like the world's greatest youth hockey tournament. They're all in the same hotel. They're playing only on one sheet of ice, you know, and the Zamboni's working overtime, right? We'll get to this in a second, but it works. The bubbles work, man, right? The NBA and the NHL, by doing this bubble system, they're showing why that system works, as opposed to, you know, MLB is struggling with now the Cardinals before the Marlins, you know, getting something going. And of course, I think everybody in all of Rutgers got COVID-19, from what I understand. I mean, would the Big Ten even miss him if Rutgers didn't show up?
Is Rutgers still in the Big Ten?
I believe so.
That's a thing. That's a thing still.
Yeah, you know what's really funny to me is I've seen some takes lately about how could BYU, why would the Big 12 ever let them in? And I think sometimes people forget that sometimes it's not that hard, right? Like sometimes conference just makes a call like Rutgers in Maryland, right?
And they make stuff up to justify it, right? Like Rutgers is going to bring us the New York television market.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everybody in Manhattan loves their Rutgers football.
Maryland's going to bring us the Washington, D.C. television market.
Everybody in D.C. loves the Terrapins.
Okay.
Except for no one in D.C. is actually from D.C.
And people who, like, the D.C. team, D.C. basketball team, I'd probably say is Georgetown.
Yeah, but, I mean, even that, how many people did you know in D.C. that had their own college basketball team and it wasn't a team in D.C.?
That's just true. D.C.'s got a lot of transplants.
Yeah, tons of transplants. So people went to school all over the country, right? People that are rooting for Pac-12 teams, for heaven's sakes. And who does that?
Well, when I lived there, you know, but that was a different time.
That was a different time.
That was back when Reggie Bush had a Heisman Trophy.
Oh, I was about to say when dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Basically the same thing. Yeah.
All right, so let's hop into the tweet bag, Matt.
Tweet bag.
We got this one from Simon. He's been silent for a while, and we're going to find out why. He emailed us. You can do that at riseandshoutpodcast@gmail.com. Simon says, I just got back from a family trip to Lake Powell. That sounds pleasant.
Sounds very nice.
There are always lots of drinks. You need to stay hydrated. Very important. And I discovered a new favorite soda, cream soda, any brand. All right. By the way, there is a Dr. Pepper cream soda. Not that I'm trying to get you in trouble with your parents, Simon.
Cream soda is delicious.
I'm just stating a fact, okay? Not encouraging
Virgil's makes
you.
A cream soda, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. Also, he says, in response to Clayton Smiley's suggestion a few weeks ago, I hate bubbly and LaCroix.
LaCroix.
But I love this juice that's called POG. It is a very good Hawaiian juice. It doesn't come in a can. Actually, I found some on Amazon in a can, Simon. You may be able to get it in a can. But it's worth it, he says. Then he has a question for us. Also, who is the non-Gemmer MVP of the decade? And who is the best player of the decade in all of the major sports at BYU? What major sports, he didn't specify, so we're just going to do football and basketball.
Fair enough.
All right, Matt, who's your all MVP, all decade MVP in basketball? We'll start with basketball.
Basketball, I'm going with Tyler Haas.
Tyler Haas had a heck of a career, that Tyler Haas.
Heck of a career. I mean, franchise leader in points over his career.
Yep.
Top three single games in points scored, and had three seasons in the top six of points in a season. I mean, this is a guy, you know, there's, you know, delivered over a long stretch. So I think I have to go with Tyler Haas.
Well, I mean, he played, his first season, if you want to call it, in the 20-aughts, in the aughts, right?
Are we still doing that? We're still using that phrase, the aughts?
How else are you going to do it? In the O's? I mean, what's your name for the decade?
I don't know, but aughts? I don't even understand what that means. The aughts?
That means those years in the first part of a century. What do you mean you don't know what it means?
Weird word.
We've been saying that for 20 years. You still don't know what it means.
I fear that which I don't understand.
That's true. But he averaged 11 points as a freshman. You know, and then had averaged more than 21 points a game sophomore through junior. Yeah, very efficient scorer. And as you said, leading scorer in BYU history, right?
Yeah, yeah. And you look at just individual seasons. I mean, you look at the top six points scored in a season. You got Jemmer at number one, Devin Durant at two, Danny Ainge at three, and Tyler Haas owns slots 4, 5, and six.
Yeah, yeah, yep. And that's, you know,
that's
he was
consistency.
He was a scorer, but he also was a good passer and a decent rebounder, right? I mean, he wasn't great at either of those things, but he was very good at both of them, right? So he added value beyond obviously being an elite offensive threat. And a we talked about this in one of our previous shows about if there was a three-point shooting contest, right, at BYU history. He's one of the guys, right? He's in that conversation, having shot 38% from three-point land over his career. And a lot of attempts, right? That's not a fluke of he didn't shoot many. I mean, he had how many three-point attempts in his career? 427, which I think is second to Jimmer all-time, if I'm not getting that one wrong. Anyway, highly efficient guy. Great answer. I'm going to give a slightly different one. I'm going to go with Yoli Childs.
Not a terrible choice.
And here's my reasoning on Yoli Childs. So he did not have the maybe the consistency of a Tyler Haas, though he certainly had a great career. His freshman year was, you know, okay. I mean, he had a good year, right? 9 points, 8 rebounds. I mean, that's hardly nothing, right? But you look at his season, the last couple of seasons, and I think he had the best season last year, truncated as it was, had the best season we've seen at BYU since Jimmer. And you and I have talked about this a couple times. I mean, it was only 19 games. He didn't get to play in the tournament, so you have to discount it a little bit for that. But it was a heck of a year. He was just an amazing player last season when he was healthy and the NCAA wasn't fraudulently getting in his way of play.
Well, and you look, I mean, his 2018-2019 season is top 10 points scored all time, right? He's top 10 career points scored. And then one thing he did do that, you know, I talk about Tyler Haas, but you look at some of these other statistical categories for Yoli Childs, top five in blocks all time, top five in blocks in a season. You know, so this guy, he's delivering all over the floor. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that had he not had the first half of his senior season fraudulently stolen by the NCAA and the second half stolen by coronavirus, we'd probably have another top 10 points scored in a season. You know, his hold on all time rebounds would be almost unbeatable. And blocks, I bet he'd be top three in blocks.
Well, I mean, he should have another 130 rebounds, right? Based on, you know, the COVID and the NCAA. You know, if he just followed his pattern from the previous two seasons.
Right.
I mean, he had 1,000 rebounds in his career, and, you know, it's amazing. And 2,000 points, you know, 159 blocks. I mean, again, he was a tremendous player, and he just last season he was just so efficient scoring the basketball. I mean, his average points per game went up, right? Which is great, but then he was actually, you know, only shooting. He wasn't shooting that many more shots, and then he, of course, the 3-point thing was you know, the last couple seasons where he was making a 3-pointer every game was pretty awesome too. But anyway, what about football, Matt? Who do you got as your all-decade MVP for football?
All-decade MVP, I got to go with Jamal Williams.
Great choice.
You know, I'm leaning really hard on some of these statistics to try and justify my picks. But with Jamal Williams, I mean, you know, leader in rushing yards over a career. It holds the record for rushing yards in a game. You know, really was the stable part on an offense that really went through some things during that stretch of time. So I'm gonna have to go with Jamal. And I mean, who doesn't like Jamal Williams? He's like an all-time fan favorite. Yeah. Still is.
Yeah, that's a great. That is a really good choice. I've got a couple. I'd love to hear your perspective on, because I think Jamal's probably the choice. Taysom would be the other one on offense. Had yep. two really good seasons in the decade, so you could certainly potentially point to him. What do you think about Fred Warner?
Fred Warner's actually that's a very interesting
or
choice.
Kyle Van Noy. Who played, I guess depends on how you're counting the decade. He either played 1 year in the previous decade or his entire career in this decade, depending on how you count it.
Well, the interesting thing about the Kyle Van Noy argument, here's a couple of interesting bits, right? Is you've got the bowl game against San Diego State that he single-handedly took over and won as from the linebacker spot. Which is, I mean, that I cannot think of another example in all of the football I've ever watched that really it serves as a good analog to what Kyle Van Noy did in that game. You know, and then what was interesting is somebody tweeted out, it was like a BYU Cougars fan account, or maybe it was the BYU football Twitter account. Somebody tweeted out the sequence that was the goal line stand against
Boise State.
Oh. And Kyle Van Noy retweeted it, but commented, we gave up 0 points on defense in that game and still lost.
I mean, it was one of, I know we lost, right? And so it just like hurts, just feels terrible inside, right? It was there, that defensive performance against a good offensive Boise State team was one of the best games. If you take offense out for a second, our offense, one of the best games I've seen a unit of football ever play. It was amazing. And we had such a good defense that year and just could not capitalize on a couple of good opportunities. A couple of Van Noy stats, 61.5 tackles for loss. He had double-digit tackles for loss in sophomore, junior, and senior year. You know, and also had that crazy 2012 where he also had 13 sacks, right? You know, and interceptions. He had 7 interceptions. I said Warner. He had more tackles, but Warner can't be it. It's got to be Van Noy or Jamal, right? Those are your two choices. And I think I'm now leaning towards Van Noy. He had 3 terrific seasons and 1 really good one. And I think if you add up, Jamal had 2 really good seasons and then some injury-shortened ones, right? So I think I'm going with Van Noy.
Yeah, and Van Noy's not a terrible choice there.
Of course he's not. It's Kyle Van
Noy. I feel like, and I'd love to go with Fred Warner, but Fred Warner, I feel like Fred Warner's going to turn out to be an example of somebody who peaked at just the right time, right? And we talk about this. He's playing his best football after getting into the NFL, where it's really going to make him some money on the second contract.
Yeah, I mean, he played some great football at BYU. Remember that?
Was it the
interception
awesome.
Or fumble recovery and then the leaping touchdown?
No, he was. Don't get me wrong. I agree with you. He's phenomenal, right? The guy had 32 tackles for a loss. I mean, he earned. He defensively, he pushed the defense. He pushed an offense back over 100 yards on tackles for loss in his career. You know, 158 solo tackles. I don't know where that ranks all time, but you know, I mean, phenomenal player, phenomenal player. And forget, you know, and you're not even taking into account there some of the things that don't get counted, where you have a guy like that on the defense who's able to read things and coach up his teammates and see stuff at the line of scrimmage and all those types of like intangible, uncountable types of things that he provided. So yeah, I think you could make an argument for Fred Warner, but I think it coming down to Kyle Van Noy or Jamal Williams is probably right.
All right. Next question we have, great discussion, is from Scott Whaley. That's Spiff Coog on Twitter. You can tweet at us at BYU_RiceShout. How does BYU hiring practices change with the WCC's new rule on minority interviews? Hashtag tweetbag. And he's referring to the WCC has now named a new rule in honor of Bill Russell, who, of course, played at the University of San Francisco. And this rule is that you have to interview underrepresented minority candidates in your staff positions. So they're going to interview minority candidates. I mean, the NFL has had that Rooney rule, right, for a long time. I just think that they'll interview some minority candidates. I mean, I don't know. Will it change anything beyond that, Matt?
No, I think, you know, if you look at some of the things that have been key components of BYU's hiring practices for coaches historically, for head coach positions, they're looking for people that are members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and understand how the honor code works at BYU. I think that's always going to be true. Now, can you find people from traditional, I believe the phrase that's used, that the West Coast Conference used, traditionally underrepresented members of a traditionally underrepresented community in the pool of final candidates for all these positions. So do I think that I think you can find somebody who's a member of the church, who's interested in coaching and has the qualifications to do that, who's from one of those, who's from a traditionally underrepresented group, who would at least be worth an interview. When you look back to the football coaching search, right, where Kalani Sitake was hired, you look at some of the people on that list. That was a pretty diverse list, actually.
But that when you got past that the guy, that Weber State guy, rules, so. And those.
No, it doesn't. But I'm just trying to make the point that I don't think BYU is going to have to change much. I think that they're going to have to be a little bit more deliberate about how they do this particular thing. But I think the pool is still the same. It's still the same group of people, and they're going to be able to find a good candidate who fits that. That's worth an interview. That's the only point I'm making.
And assistants, they can obviously don't have to be members of the church, and they can really cast a wide net, which they have historically cast a wide net. So we'll see how that goes. 2020 schedule, Matt, is a mess. We thought the Big 12 might save us. Not so fast, my friend. They went to a 9+1 schedule, and we may end up getting a Big 12 game or two as the plus one because the potential plus one candidates seem to be shrinking, right?
Yeah, they do. Well, not that they're shrinking in size. The pool of potential candidates is shrinking.
Both things, I think, actually.
The teams aren't acting. Well, some of the teams are shrinking.
Yeah, Rutgers is shrinking.
It's a separate issue.
So, you know, well, anyway, let's go to the tweet bag. We've got a couple questions on this. Jared on Twitter, that's at JHVDEH84.
Ooh, he says, lost me in there.
What do you think happens for BYU if the G5 conferences decide it's too expensive to actually have a football season since none of them will be getting the body bag games? We've already seen FCS conferences cancel the season or move to spring. So Matt, what in that scenario, in Jared's scenario, where all G5 conferences disappear for the year, what happens to BYU schedule, football schedule? Kills it, right?
I go back and forth on this. It probably kills it, but you know, they could still string together probably 4 or 5 games. Do you play if you get 5 games?
I think
so. And call it a season?
I think so.
You might be able to string together 5 games. I mean, Big 12 is saying they're going to play one out of conference. You got a couple other independent teams. You might be able to lock something down with. I mean, it wouldn't be a fun schedule.
No, it wouldn't be a fun schedule, and maybe you play UMass twice.
Right. You play UMass or Liberty twice to get yourself to six. If you get to count one FCS opponent, you find one of those that didn't cancel or move to the spring, you bring Dixie up to Provo, or SUU or something. I mean, I think BYU in that scenario still probably gets to string together five, maybe six games, and I think they play it.
Yeah, I think they play it. So let me run a few scenarios past you that Jared did not. Okay. Anyway, before we do that though, let's answer Nicoletto's question. That's Nicoletto on Twitter. He says, this may be beat to death, but here goes. Will an all Big 12 schedule happen for BYU this season? I think we already know the answer to that, unfortunately.
Right.
Will there even be a season? So, Matt, will there be a season? You've been on record as saying no. You don't think it's going to happen. We've had Jeff Johnston said, been very skeptical, and other of our listeners have been very skeptical that it's going to happen. I've been the optimistic one that they'll figure out a way to have a semblance of a season. Heck, Conference USA, the rumor that I read today is that they're going to play a 12-game season. So if they decide to do that, we may have, five Conference USA teams on the schedule.
Maybe Conference USA invites us to join for a season.
Here's the thing, right? If one of the G5 schools invites us for a season, I think you got to take it at this point, don't you?
Yeah, I think you do, because it's either that or you play or you struggle to get to six games.
Yeah.
So if you want to struggle to get to six games and play UMass twice, yeah, you can go it on your own here. This is not a moratorium on independence, but
no, we talked about this last week.
How are you supposed to have predicted this 10 years ago? So.
The independence haters and the Tom Homo haters are using this in the worst kind of confirmation bias.
Right? Obviously,
independence doesn't work during a pandemic.
You can't do it. You can't be independent if there's a global pandemic. Well, there's a lot of things it turns out you can't be or do when there's a global pandemic. But I think you're right. If one of these conferences, Conference USA, if one of these conferences asks you to come in on a deal like that, I think you go. If it's Mountain West Conference, I think you tell them to stick it.
No, you go. Today is Mountain West Conference. We're already de facto in that relationship like Notre Dame has with ACC. It's just not formalized.
Yeah, not interested.
Oh, that's dumb. You got to play it. And
You know what else is dumb? The fact that they still have that guy running the conference.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's...
Yeah, there's awesome. Another... There's somebody else. There's another Voldemort, right?
Yeah.
That conference is a mess.
Okay, well, they still would have to join it this year if they...
I don't think he would invite us. And I think there's enough... I think there's enough bitterness...
Oh, I don't think...
From some of those schools. I don't think they'd be interested in having us do it.
You're smoking crack.
Some of them still won't schedule us.
Dude, the ESPN is going to give them money. They're all desperate for money right now. I mean, the pandemic has absolutely hammered university budgets. No way. If ESPN comes in and say, we'll give you this much extra money to put BYU in the school, they're going to do it. And the university presidents are going to tell all those ADs to shut their traps and put them in the conference for a year. Guaranteed. I just don't know if the Mountain West is even going to... I mean, Jared's question is not dumb. If you're Wyoming, I don't know if it pays to play football this year.
That's a fact. That is a fact.
You may be better off just punting on the season. If
just
you're Wyoming.
Like your offense. If you're
yes,
Wyoming.
Yeah, yeah. Just like your you're offense off every four punting. Plays. That's not Start true. Now. That's probably not true for Utah State. It's probably not true for Boise. It may not be true for Air Force and a few other schools in the Mountain West. But for a subsection of that conference, they may be sitting there going, guys, we don't want to play anything, right? I thought that was true of some of the Conference USA schools, and if that rumor is true, they're thinking the opposite is we have to have games because at least the little TV money coming in can help with our budget shortfalls.
Yeah, and I don't know much about Conference USA's TV deal, but they're an ESPN deal, right?
I believe so.
Right, so that might be it. Like they looked at it and they said, hey, if we stick together and play our full schedule, we still get all the money from this contract.
Right, and you know, those extra games,
which is what you've seen these other conferences do. You know, that's they can cancel the non-conference games and still cash in on their deals.
Well, and all these non-conference games, you know what ESPN, Fox Sports, and everybody's going to want? Inventory. Right?
Yep.
They're going to want inventory because, you know, you're going to have fewer football games. You know, the 9+1 from there and the SEC not. I mean, the ACC, how mad is the ACC at the SEC? They basically set up a +1 just so that some of these schools can play their in-state SEC rivals. And the SEC basically tells them to stick it.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah, but that's what do you expect the SEC to do? I mean, if you're surprised by this, you've not been paying attention.
I thought the SEC was gonna, you know, if you're one of the teams on the bottom of the SEC, this is gonna be a long freaking year for you.
Yes, it is.
I mean, I get why they did what they did. But I think some of these teams got strong-armed because it's not good for their programs to not win a football game.
If you're Vandy. But if you're Vandy, like that was already a concern.
No, it wasn't. You're going to play some FCS team and destroy them.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I hear what you're saying. I just, you know, Conference USA has both Lane Kiffin and Butch Davis. I'm just saying.
That's crazy. That's just crazy.
And Skip Holtz? I didn't even realize he was
so crazy. It's like these are all people that at one point were coaching in the SEC. Is that true?
Skip Holtz?
Where's Skip Holtz?
I don't think so. No, I mean, he coached. Yeah, as an assistant. As an assistant, he was in the SEC.
Where?
South Carolina.
No, oh, there you go. He was.
He was an SEC coach.
That's great.
He was the offensive coordinator there for a while.
This is fantastic.
Yeah, so. Anyway. All right.
Anyway.
The second half of Nick's question is about what are the chances the P5s plus Notre Dame plus BYU leave the NCAA and create their own league? Hashtag tweetbag. Hashtag climb on in. Hashtag 2020 equals the pain bag. And he basically clarifies, and I know, Nick, I was just giving you crap about stealing Gary Payne's pain bag. I mean, 2020 sucks, right?
Yeah, it's just one giant bag of pain.
I mean, nobody's disagreeing with you, Nick. Nobody's disagreeing. We'll get back to that. We got another question on that, and we're going to kind of have a big discussion on that. All right, Randy Whittle had a question off of Facebook on the 2020 season that we've kind of already answered, but I'm going to phrase it a different way here. And if you want to join the conversation on Facebook, it's facebook.com/risingshout. He says, over or under, we get 8 games this season. Do you think the shortened season due to lack of conference games will affect recruiting and transfers moving forward? So over and under 8 games, I'm going to say over because I've been optimistic this whole time.
And I'm sticking with the under here.
All right. I don't think, Matt, to his second question, I don't think this affects recruiting really at all. I think all of this is weird for everybody. And I just think maybe it could tip the scales on somebody going, oh, man, being independent has some rough patches to it. And then they'll look at the 2021 schedule and think, oh, that's a really good schedule BYU has. You know what I mean?
If this weren't universally impacting college football, I might feel differently. Now, does it have a little bit of a different feel for us because of the independence thing? Sure, but that's a short-lived issue, right? As soon as this thing goes away for BYU and everybody else, you're back to normal, and the independence thing isn't a concern anymore because you have a schedule.
I forgot we play 4 Pac-12 teams next year in 2021.
Yeah. Yeah. You're worried about joining the Mountain West. We're a de facto member of the Pac-12. We're going to win a division in the Pac-12 in 2021.
No, 5 games. It's 5. That's right. It's 5 games because of the Washington State game. I missed that in October. Yeah, we play. We only play 2 Mountain West teams that season. Our rivals at Aggies and the Broncos.
If you're going to play 2 Mountain West teams, those are the 2 I want to play. But
oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. And, you know, that 2022 schedule looks a little sparse, and we are playing Wyoming.
If they're still around. They might not even have a football program in 2022.
We'll get back to that here in a second. All right, so Keith Smith has a long and crazy email that I'm a little afraid to read.
I understand why, because I read it. And it gets weird. I'm not going to lie. Well, it gets a little weird.
He was, and probably, based on this email, continues to be a weird dude. I mean, I lived with him for 3 years of my life. So, you know, he is the longest I have ever had a roommate besides my wife.
I will say this. It is still one of the greatest regrets of my college experience is not coming to live with you guys that semester right before my mission.
The offer was there, buddy.
Would have been epic.
But you wanted to stay in the dorms.
I could have lived a bunch of this.
You could have. All right. So all right,
go ahead.
Here's Keith. Another listener recently attempted to convert us to LaCroix and other sparkling beverages with no sugar or minimal flavor, the fastest way to dehydration. I'm totally with him. What ends up happening?
I'm on board. To this point, with his email, he and I we're vibing.
I mean, I have had that experience where I've tried to go with a tasteless drink like that, and by the end of the day, I'm like, "What's wrong with me? I have a headache." Oh, that's right. I didn't drink anything because it's gross, right? All right. This was one of the most offensive pieces you have ever featured, he says. Sugary caffeinated drinks. What's that?
And now we're coming off the rails.
No, I agree with him. It was offensive. Sugary caffeinated drinks, often consumed shamefully, hidden away from your family. I don't. I do it in open. Did I share with you that my kids did for Father's Day, you know, one of those little sheets that the kids do? And favorite drink? 5 for 5 Dr. Pepper, even the 3-year-old, without prompting, knew what to say. So not everybody does it that way. All right. They have been a hallmark of this people for hundreds of years, or at least a few decades.
What people is he talking about?
I think he's talking about members of the church. I don't know.
Actually, that's factual then. I'm going to go ahead and say that's fact.
I think that's who he's
talking about. I mean, what other region of the country has like a war between 2 different soda stands?
No one. No,
Swig
no
and whatever the other one is called.
No place has it. All right.
Okay.
So Keith continues. All of us have heard stories of senior brethren drinking Coke on an airplane, as told by my best friend's brother's cousin, who heard it in gospel doctrine class. Let us not sully their what? You keep interrupting.
That's
me,
also
dude.
A thing. Sorry, that's a thing. He's really hitting. Yeah. He's hitting some notes here.
Yeah, he is hitting some notes, and then he says, "Let us not sully their memory by abandoning such delicious refreshment." All right, so. This is where, if we stop the email or skip this next paragraph, I think we'd be okay. But I'm going to read this next paragraph.
Up to this point, it's entertaining and factual.
And mostly
these are
factual.
All things. that this people, right? These are all things that go on in our little culture here. Okay, great. But all now right. This is where things start to get weird.
All right. Speaking of soda, he says, I spilled my drink in Adam's car because I thought it lacked character. That is bogus. The look on your face, Keith, when you spilled that drink was one of pure terror. We had barely just met. And to be fair, I think he didn't like me because I didn't know I had a new roommate. And I came in from the airport at like 2 a.m. and he was asleep in the bed in the room. And I'd like flip on the lights, pull on my suitcase after Christmas break. And I didn't know anybody was there. And he's just like, looks up at me. I'm like, oh, I guess I have a new roommate. Hi. Anyway, so it might have been revenge, actually, for me waking him up at 2 a.m. He says,
you lacked character.
That's right. Much like the new Hyundai he bought later had 0 character. How does he remember what car I got?
How does somebody not remember the Hyundai? Come on, man.
That's true. You drove cross country in that car.
And we just talked about this a couple weeks ago. We went through like your iteration of cars.
Yeah, we did.
We just did this a couple weeks ago. We might have jogged his memory.
Nah, he's got a crazy good memory, I think. Anyway,
Hyundai had some character. I have some funny memories in that Hyundai.
Yeah, that's a good. It was a good car. I like that car.
That car was a great car.
And it had me buy a Hyundai later on that I totally regretted, and will probably never buy that brand again. But anyway, he said that prompted him to take it up to Y Mountain one evening with a girl. He actually says co-ed, but 1957 called and they'd like their sexist frames back, Keith.
Yeah, co-ed. It's
co-ed. Come on, man. I wonder which...
Wait a minute. Nobody drives cars up Y Mountain. Nobody drives to the Y. It's not a road.
He's not talking about Y Mountain. This is where his memory is gone.
No, he's talking about Squaw Peak. Course, I know what he's saying.
Yes, he is. He's not talking about White Mountain.
Not wrong.
It's in Provo Canyon, Keith. Anyway, I wonder which incident made you angrier. As I recall, it was White Mountain, or should we say, with the incident with the Hyundai. The answer is the second
hiking trail.
Yeah, I mean, because he kissed someone in that car before I did, and that was a little frustrating. I guess. I mean,
I remember this.
Am I, as a 44-year-old dude, am I allowed to even talk about this anymore?
Weird.
It seems a little weird. It's probably not weird, though. We're just talking about...
When this happened, I remember you guys arguing over this. I mean, it was mostly in jest. Like, we were just messing around. But I remember this. This was a thing when this happened.
Oh, yeah. It was definitely a thing.
He didn't lay it out for anybody immediately. It kind of came up as a course of conversation.
But I would say this. It just shows my magnanimousness that I let my roommate borrow my car.
You really like to use that word.
I do. I do like that word. Speaking of dating, he says, because this email just keeps going on, which current BYU athlete from last year would be the best wingman on a double date if you're single? Thanks for adding that qualification, Keith. Are we qualified to talk about this? I feel like this is a question for a podcast for if we were podcasting 20 years ago. Anyway, a few factors he might consider are looks, can't be better looking. So many jokes, Keith. So many jokes. Personality, can't be funnier. I mean, who are you going to pick, Keith? They can't be better looking or funnier than you? It's a small pool, dude. I'm going with Zach Selyus, he says, whose haircut and boisterous way might inspire my date to appreciate my quiet dignity. Trademark Provo MTC. Dude, you are not quiet dignity? Anyway. Matt, you don't have to answer this question if you don't want to.
So I would just look at it. Can I just look at it a little bit differently, like through the eyes of an adult?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, who on this team do I think would be fun to hang out with?
Sure. Yeah.
I could answer that as a question. I think that's normal. I mean, but I've been married 17 years.
Wait a second. Before you go there.
Double dates I go on at this point? We don't go on double dates.
Wait a second.
We
Hold
should.
On.
Maybe I'm doing it wrong.
Hold on. I just realized something. Keith, a couple times, suggested we go on, that I find a date and we go on double dates.
Oh, dear.
Does that mean this is
so awkward?
Thought I was both uglier and less funny than him?
Huh. Oh boy, you were at least one of those things. All right.
Hey, actually, this is a good time for a story about Keith and myself. So he got a date, and he comes home and he says, "I need you to come with me on a double date." She doesn't want to do a single date. I'm like, "Cool, all right." So I'm like, I'll find somebody. He goes, no, she already found somebody. It's her sister.
Ah, great. This is going so well already.
And I'm like, oh, gosh, Keith, you're killing me here. So we take them to, I don't remember if we went out to eat first. I think we did. And then we went to the Sixth Sense. Opening weekend.
Great. This is great.
Now, if you haven't seen the Sixth Sense, go watch it. I'm sorry if I'm going to. I won't ruin it because we might have younger listeners who've never seen it. So I won't ruin it. Won't matter. there's a twist. And at the end, we're the three of us, my date, myself, and Keith, are just walking out there like, holy crap. You know, just blown away by the movie, seeing it in theaters. And his tape basically says, that is the dumbest movie I've ever seen. And I'm like, what? She's like, totally, the twist wasn't real. If you watch back of that movie, they broke their own rules. Which, of course, all of us who've seen the movie multiple times know what is, if that was true or not. Which is, Shyamalan didn't break any of his rules. Right? But it was like one of the, after we got home and whatever we're talking about, you can't take that girl out again. She's dumb as rocks. I mean, wow. What a killjoy. What a killjoy coming out of that. Anyway. So who do you think would be fun to hang out with?
I have no idea. Tristan Hodge seems like he could be a good guy.
Yeah.
I'd
hang out with Nicoletto. He's an alum.
We're doing anybody? Is that what this question
well,
was?
Well, he said last year's team, but that's too narrow. Nicoletto's an alum. You could hang out with Chaz Ayu. He's got things to say.
I could do Chaz Ayu.
He's got things to say. I don't know if you've seen his Twitter comments.
Can we get that? He's the one who used the helicopter, right, to announce that he was signing with BYU?
Yeah, and he got...
the helicopter. If we can get the helicopter on the date, I'm in.
I think that's been the flack he's caught complaining about some of the conditions at BYU with the sports program was, I think, a few people have commented, well, you know, for a guy who did announce what college he was going to off of a helicopter, you're probably barking up the wrong tree. But, I mean... these guys can say whatever they want. So, Matt, before we go to the big why, you can support this podcast at patreon.com/riseandshout. You know, we don't ask you to pay anything. We never ask you to pay anything. But if you want to, you can pay us a little something. And once the season starts or we're in movie club, because one of those two things is happening this fall, right? We'll give away another gift card to the BYU bookstore this fall. So, and it will only be eligible for those that are givers on Patreon. All right, the big why, Matt, is basically coming down to that question that Nicoletto said, and Chris Murphy had kind of hinted at this on last week's show or 2 weeks ago. That's at C Murphy Pro. He says he's responding to a... kind of some news that had broken out by Pat Ford and others that Power 5 leadership is exploring staging their own fall championships if the Board of Governors cancel and postpone them, and they'll just do it on their own, right? If there's no fall championships in various sports, it's not actually just about football, right? And they said Ross Dellinger says the beginning of the schism perhaps between the P5 and the NCAA. And if I were Mark Emmert, I'd be really worried. And Chris Murphy says, this is exactly what I was worried about when I asked you guys regarding the beginning of the separation of the P5 with the G5. Not good for BYU. So let's break this down in a couple different ways, Matt. First, if the P5 broke from the rest of the NCAA, and it's got to be all sports, right? Because otherwise, I mean, I guess it could work for football, kind of. But it would be really hard to make this work just for football. And it's one of the reasons why it hasn't happened yet in football. Right? And they've used the BCS and the college football playoff as a way to kind of do it. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a little bit of a testing ground, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that silence is, you know, we've been doing this for 10 years. That means you say something.
I thought it was a rhetorical question.
Oh, this isn't a rhetorical question show. This is a I ask you question show.
Sometimes you ask rhetorical questions. On occasion, I guess I do.
All right. So, Matt, is this good for BYU if the P5 decides, forget the NCAA, we're creating our own governing body, and we're breaking away from this three-ring circus?
I don't think it's good for BYU if it happens right now. BYU is an afterthought in that conversation. And the likelihood that you'll get left behind is too high. So if this becomes the catalyst, if 2020 becomes the catalyst that pushes this, I think BYU could be in real trouble. I think you want one more round of TV contract renegotiation and the potential of getting scooped up in a different kind of a deal or arrangement with one of these conferences when ESPN can convince the Big 12 or convince the Pac-12 to sign us to 6-7 games a year or something. I think you need to get into that position before you want this to really start forming. And the fact that we're not in that position today, I think puts us in danger of being left out in the cold.
Yeah, it does, for sure. I think we get included if they do this. Because here's what's going to happen, right, is they're going to sit there and say, you know, we've got – the P5 has got, what, 60 schools? Is that right?
Sure-ish.
Anyway, the P5 is going to sit there, and they're not balanced today because the Big 12 is off, right? And what they're going to want is similarly sized conferences. Doesn't have to be exact, but the Big 12 right now is too small. So that means one of two things. You add other teams before you go in there, or you move some teams around. Well, nobody in the SEC wants to leave it, right? Nobody.
Yeah, because it just means more.
Yeah, it's less money. Nobody in the Big Ten is going to move, right? The two conferences that are in danger are the Big 12 because of their lack of membership and the Pac-12 because of their lack of money, right? So I think it could be good for BYU. What I think they will add teams, and it won't just be Notre Dame. I think they will add in that scenario. Notre Dame's already part of the P5 and in the other sports, right, besides. The thing that makes this difficult and why I think football hasn't done it already is because of the other sports. I think if just football coaches and football, you know, ADs that only care about football get together, they would have already done this because the NCAA has very little to do with football in a lot of ways anyway, right?
Well, yeah, at that level, right.
Yeah. So it could be good, it could be bad for BYU. Do you think at that next, because here's the maybe the more important question, depending on how you view it, do you think at that next renegotiation that the P5 is going to do this and create a separate division of football and quite frankly, all the other sports?
I think it's very likely. The obvious thing right now that we're all looking at is what this pandemic is doing to the college football season and the opportunity it may give these conferences to test this out, try some version of something out. But there's a couple other things at play here, right? There were forces before this all happened that were kind of nudging in this direction. And then on top of this, what we also have going on at the same time is all of this discussion and potential legislation around the name, image, and likeness issue.
Yeah, right.
And I think the more that the NCAA tries to insert themselves into the way that is put together and trying to gain some rights or version of control over that for players, I don't think anybody wants the NCAA in there trying to adjudicate this.
No,
it's a mess. Heck, and so I think that you're looking at a combination of things that could put these schools in an opportunity where they have to get out. You know, you've got players who are starting to figure this thing out and are making demands, and you know, I think the likelihood that at this next round you do these you get these TV contracts, and then one of these TV bodies, ESPN or whoever, put something together and says, hey, look, everybody, what if let's just stage our own, and then you get pushed in kind of in that direction. There's just so many pieces that are pushing you at this point, and the NCAA doesn't know what to do. They're just flailing around in the dark, you know, over this name, image, likeness issue. Over, they know they have zero authority in telling any of these schools what to do with their football seasons. I mean, so I think it's becoming more and more likely that this becomes a thing.
Yeah, I don't know. There are obviously some serious tailwinds, if you will, to making this happen. The problem is called the other sports, right? Because if the P5 breaks away, what happens to the NCAA basketball tournament? If you've only got 70 schools, you're not going to put 64 of them in a tournament. You need the G5. And in basketball, I mean, the basketball, there's, what, 300 Division I schools?
So I think it's where the money is, right? And the money for basketball is in that tournament. You're absolutely correct. So I think the tournament survives. And so football leaves the NCAA. Everything else stays together. And then the powers that be, these Power Five conference, tell Mark Emmert, whatever his name is, they say, look, you stay away from this name, image, likeness issue and let us handle that with our basketball players, or we're going to do the same thing like we just did with football. And he backs off. It's a bluff because you can't really do it because the money's really in the tournament. I'm with you. But I think football becomes a separate entity.
Well, and this,
it just becomes something else.
This goes to, and I think it's very likely what you're describing could happen with the next round of TV contracts. And like you said, it could be very bad for BYU. Could be good because I think they need more teams to even things out. But that doesn't mean they have to take BYU, by the way. BYU makes the most sense of almost any school, as we previously discussed, economically, but the decision might be based on other things. The Pac-12 players who are talking about boycotting the season, perhaps, and their list of demands, I'd love your overall thoughts on that, but one of the things that was missing in their list of demands when they're asking for 50% revenue share, which is insane, because the pro sports, I mean, what the players are demanding would end amateurism at the NCAA level, right? If you did a revenue share model. But anyway, set that aside for a minute. 50% revenue share. Matt Brown, and I've seen other people talk about this on Twitter, there's a bunch of Division I football programs that they would have to shut down half of their sports if they did that.
Yep.
And that was not addressed in this letter. And I think quite frankly, the players came off looking pretty bad in the middle of a pandemic. Instead of it being, I think they were like, this is social justice. It didn't seem like social justice to me. It seemed like asking, and maybe it's just them trying to negotiate, but I think they overshot the mark. But I love your thought on their demands.
Well, I find this whole thing and the way it's playing out is fascinating, right? I do believe that the list of demands is an opening salvo in what they see as a negotiation. I think they're getting advice. I think they're being advised by people. We know they're getting advised, right? By former players and other things. And so, and for them to throw out the 50% revenue sharing and the fact that that was the same number that we saw a professional union go after with their league, I don't think that's a mistake either. Because you know what this looks a lot like to me? This looks like players unionizing. And you know, and this is one of the things people were worried about in when you start paying these players, are they employees and then are they a union? And I think that makes universities nervous as well. So I think there's a lot about what they're doing here that is meant really to send a signal. What's unfortunate about it is I think what they tried to do is lay this out and say, hey, our big concern here is COVID-19, and we're not sure you're really doing enough to protect us from that. And so we want some of these other things, you know, so we want the health insurance that goes, you know, I think it's 6 years past after you're done playing. But you know what? That they're not negotiating that just for COVID symptoms. They're negotiating that for guys like Luke Staley, right, who can't walk up and down stairs. I mean, I don't know if Luke Staley can walk up and down stairs, but there's people who get their legs so messed up, right, that they can't, that they have these issues and they get out of school and might not be, and if they don't have a job, they might not have insurance to get this stuff treated. These are the types of issues that these guys are going after, really. And I think that the COVID-19 front was a little bit too thin, and that's what's causing people to kind of to look through it, just completely overlook that piece and see, well, why are they asking for all of this money? This all seems a little bit, this seems a little bit overblown. Maybe they need to dial this back a little bit. But it's as a process, it's fascinating. But I don't imagine that any of those guys that are kind of the leaders in this movement or anybody that's advising them really thinks they're going to get everything on this list.
Yeah.
I mean,
I
think they understand that that's just not how this works.
Yeah.
This is your opening offer.
Yeah, this is your opening offer, and I get that. But here's the problem. The unintended consequences of what they're asking for are massive, right? If it will change the face, if they even get a proportion of what they asked for, it'll change the face of college athletics. And maybe that's okay, and maybe that's inevitable, and maybe it's coming down the line. But what we know is college sports today could cease to exist. I mean, I saw Keith Van Horn basically come out and say, well, we should just abolish the whole NCAA and just play club sports. Well, what club do you root for, Matt? Who's watching those sports?
Right.
Right. The eyeballs don't necessarily move when you change the system. And I think there are these players are making demands, thinking that they're going to change it for the better, knowing in most cases, quite frankly, that it's not going to help them, right? Because NCAA career is 4 years, right? And anything changes like this aren't going to happen before anytime soon, right? What is it going to look like in 5 or 10 years? I mean, we talked about the P5, G5 thing. What if the Supreme Court says these are employees of the university and not students, right? They're employees who happen to be taking classes.
Yeah, as opposed they're student to, employees, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they should be granted all these things. It's not a club. It's not amateur. Now, you and I have talked about this. It's not, right? Not really, right? I mean, and there's probably some benefits and some things that they should get beyond. And don't give me the line about they get a scholarship and they should just be happy and I'd play football at the collegiate level if I could. I don't get that. I think that's some of the dumbest arguments against this, quite frankly, because in the end, they are generating value for the university and getting only a fraction of that value, right? And a lot of other people are getting massive amounts of that value.
And the other thing is if you talk to a lot of these athletes and not just in football, but kind of across the board about their experience at the universities, right? And you look at the percentage of if you had a 100% graduation rate, I might actually. I still don't know that I would you still don't win the day with that argument, but I think you at least have a point. But the graduation rates at some of these programs are such that I don't think that argument holds any type of water because he didn't get a free education. Because after 3 or 4 years of taking basket weaving and other classes because the coaches didn't want him to take a tough schedule or professors weren't working with him because he was going to be traveling so much, right? He, you know, that guy finishes his eligibility and he leaves the university and he doesn't have a degree. And so you didn't get the value out of that.
Well, so, and I think one of their demands was
doing
cool.
something to make sure these guys walk out of there with diplomas. Yeah. I don't think you can argue that they got the value of the education because they just didn't.
Well, I liked one of the suggestions in those demands was master's degree scholarships. Or six years worth of tuition or something, right?
Sure.
And that's something would be relatively inexpensive for the university to do as opposed to 50% revenue share, right?
Because, you know, and people are like, well, you know, if they want to take easy classes, that's on them. And it's not, right? Because what we demand of these players to perform at the level they perform at a Division I top flight football program, I mean, it's tough. And the hours that they have to put in and the timing of those hours and all that is – it's hard. And to try and balance that with your studies, I mean, you know, I worked multiple part-time jobs at a time going through college, and that was hard, right? I think we say that with too much ease without totally understanding the experience. But, I mean, anyway, I think I've made my point, which is if you're not making sure that these kids walk out of there with diplomas – you can't tell me that they're getting the value of the education in exchange for their football play. And I'm not even asking you to give them any money. In my opinion, the easy thing to do is just open it up and let them go make money. Let them sign a deal with Gatorade or the car dealership down the street or the sandwich shop or whatever it is. Let them stand outside the pizza place off campus, right? Well, and let everybody say, hey, this is Riley Nelson's favorite pizza or whatever it is. Like, let them do those things.
Yeah, and a lot of times I think what a lot of these players are going to find out with that is they're not going to get a deal, right? If you're the backup punter, you're probably not getting a deal. Unless happen to be hilarious or something, you know what I mean? I mean, Johnny Linehan could probably get a deal, right? Even if he's the backup punter.
There's probably businesses in Utah that would pay Johnny Linehan today.
Today, yeah.
To get on a commercial and say something about punting on fourth and long from your own end zone.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, these are complicated issues. I mean, I don't begrudge the players for wanting to have more benefits, and I don't begrudge them for being a little worried about this season and playing. I do think that there is, and I don't begrudge the Power Five, quite frankly, for saying, especially in football, that there's not a lot of benefits of being tied to you guys, right? That being said, if you hear coaches talk, they don't want this to go down this way because they need those games against South Florida, right? They need those games against – they want – yeah, you got your FCS games, but they want games against lower FBS schools.
But let me ask you this question. Let's just say P5 breaks away. They set up their own thing.
They can still schedule us, yeah.
Yeah, they're just exhibition games at the beginning of the season. Now, you come up with your own way of deciding how that factors into the playoffs for your special new P5 entity. Just like they do today where they say, however many of your games against an FCS opponent can count towards bowl eligibility, you just write your own rule for it, and you let them go play one or two of those games a year. And then when you do that and you pay those teams to play you, they will make sure that they have a Saturday or two at the end of August or beginning of September where they can play those games and still work inside of whatever is left over at the NCAA after that. I don't think you have to give that up to make this work.
Probably not. All right. Well, this has been a show, Matt. We talked about a lot of different things all over the place on this one. But I would say, you know, I'm less optimistic about us playing football this fall than I was over the last few weeks. I think the Rutgers thing, the Marlins, the Cardinals, it's just shown how hard it is to get these things done if you're not in a bubble. And NFL beware, right? Because the Cardinals and the Marlins, they can cancel games and maybe play them later and just decide, well, the Marlins are going to play 56 games instead of 60, right? What are you going to do in the NFL if somebody misses a week? A team does, and that means another team does.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Or what are you going to do when you get deeper into your 60 games and you've got teams who are playing 48 games, teams who are playing 56 games, teams that are playing 50 games, and teams that played 60 games?
I think you're fine because you have 60
playoffs after that.
No, I think if you're baseball, you roll with that because they still played a bunch of games, right? But what do you do in football when you have 16 games and one team misses two? You're going to let that team in the playoffs because they have a better winning percentage? In baseball, I think you do it. But in the NFL, that's a disaster, right? You just don't have enough time to absorb that stuff, right? And the Marlins aren't going to have a problem again. Those players are not going to go clubbing again, right? I mean, this was a wake-up call for them, no doubt, that life is not normal. But yeah, I'm less optimistic. But I'm still hopeful. Does that make sense? Blue goggles on?
Oh, look at you.
Eight games. Just give me eight games. Six games. Seven games. Give me something. All right. Anyway, well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening. We'll be back next week to talk about maybe fall camp stuff. And not COVID.
Yeah, fall camp opened today, and we didn't even really get to talk about it.
Now,
there were fights.
There's nothing to talk about yet. I mean,
yeah, there were fights, which I think is
there's
funny.
Fights, and then the reporters are going to say, "Oh, that's just shows they're feisty."
It just shows that they haven't hit anybody, and they've all been locked up in their apartments in and they're college kids, and they finally got outside and got to put pads on.
Yeah, that's probably what it means. But anyway, we'll be back next week. Thank you very much for downloading and listening. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors, and we'll catch you next time.
Go Cougars!